All right, we're back on Big Board Sports. Playoffs are here. The Buffalo Bills will go on the road on Sunday to Jacksonville against a good Jags team with a really good quarterback. Can they get the victory? Let's bring on Chuck Pollack from the Wellsville Sun, who's been covering the Bills for over 50 years, and we reach out quite a bit when it comes to Buffalo on Big Board Sports. Chuck, how are you?
I'm very well, Raj. Your listeners had to enjoy that game yesterday. There was no pressure.
No pressure, and and if you were a longtime fan of the Bills, you're just enjoying all the nostalgia. I mean, I thought Andrew Catalan, who's a former colleague of mine here at WNYT in Albany, did a great job, and they had a lot of stories about, you know, games at that stadium, and that was the last game in that stadium, right? Unless, I don't know, there'll be another game there because they get up, maybe
a lot of teams would have to
lose. Most likely that was the end. So I enjoyed all the stories. And Chuck, that's where I wanted to start with you. You've covered the Bills for over 50 years. You have many stories from covering games in that building.
You know, Raj, it's interesting because I started with the very first game at what was then Rich Stadium in 1973. And I've written about this a couple of times over the last year. And I think I ended up doing like 842 games. But I only missed two. And one was because of a high school game that was being played down here that I had to cover. The other was that incredibly unforgettable game against the Cowboys when they blew a Monday night game. But every other game I was there, and it was a privilege to do that. And it's just interesting, you go back for 50 years and say, oh my God, that's a lot of games, and I saw a lot of pretty good stuff, you know.
And you saw some really good teams, right? What was your biggest and best moment, Chuck, of a game in that building?
Well, you know, I've already written about this a couple of times, but the comeback was just incredible. And I'm not going to be naive enough to say, oh, I knew they were going to come back. But when the game was only 28-3 at halftime, I thought, you know, they've got that K-gun offense. They could come back. And then, bang, right away, they give up a pick six. Now they're down 35-3. And they, okay, they're toast. And then that comeback was just incredible. And, of course, people deny it. But what ended up happening, when that touchdown was scored, people started leaving. And all of a sudden they realized, oh, my God, they're coming back. And people are climbing over the fences to get back into the game. It was an extraordinary day.
Yeah, and I enjoyed the pregame. I don't know if you saw it on ESPN, where Chris Berman was in the locker room and a sit-down with Thurman Thomas, Jim Kelly, and Steve Tasker. And they all were telling stories about the locker room and the camaraderie and the friendship and their great memories. So it was really cool. And then, of course, you know, the game was really nothing yesterday because the Jets are just a really bad football team. And the Bills got some rest. So onward we go. I don't know that the Bills fans should love this matchup, though. This is going to be a tough game on Sunday going to Jacksonville.
I was just looking at that, Raj, and I'll just take you back to 2017. That was the first year that Sean McDermott was coach. They were toast. Last game, they're not in the playoffs. And Andy Dalton, by a miracle, throws a touchdown pass on fourth down at the end of the game to eliminate the Ravens. Mm. And the Bills get in, and they ended up in the playoffs. Now, it was a terrible game. The Bills that were playing Tyrod Taylor at quarterback, the unforgettable Blake Bortles was quarterback of the Jaguars. And, of course, they lost 10-3. The game was a total drag. But it was an amazing accomplishment in the first year for McDermott. Now, I was just looking. You know, you normally think, okay, the number three seed is the Jags. The number six seed is the Bills. And so why wouldn't the Jags be favored? They're not. The Bills are actually favored by a point. And I think this is going to be a fascinating game. Although I got to say, at this point, Josh Allen is not really playing his best. And I think the way the Jags are playing, you can say, you know, they should be favored, and they really do look pretty good. So I'm anxious for that for Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock to see how that all plays out.
Chuck, how many touches do you anticipate, or how often, let's say, should James Cook be getting the football? You alluded to the fact that it's true that Josh Allen isn't playing his best football of his career. He's MVP last year. He hasn't really been that this year. But James Cook, you could say, has been MVP of this offense. How often should the Bills be leaning on him Sunday afternoon in Jacksonville?
Michael, he's got to see 20 touches. Okay. And the reason is because they also use him as a receiver. And the thing that made me feel good last night, and I have nothing against Derrick Henry, but I thought, oh, please don't let James Cook lose the rushing title to Derrick Henry. And I've got to say, if you guys watched that game last night, that was absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking that field goal is going to be good, and here it is, and we're going to see, as we've gotten used to, that Baltimore is going to be in the playoffs. And no, I mean, isn't it weird looking at the playoffs? There's no Baltimore. There's no Kansas City. There's no Cincinnati. It's just a really weird alignment.
I mean, it sets the stage for the Bills to make a run here, doesn't it?
You know, it does. It does, Raj. And I was thinking about that. It's just there's maybe not a lot of romance to those matchups, but it puts the Bills in a position where they can make some hay, which would be for Bills fans, because, you know, you're not looking at the Bills this year and saying, well, this is a Super Bowl team, because I don't think that. But circumstantially, you think, you know, maybe you turn this into chicken salad.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. I was questioning the defense of this team and the ability to stop the run, but I do think they've gotten better at least the last couple of weeks, take yesterday out of the equation. But prior to that, the last couple of games, it seems like the Bills are a little bit better defensively, because I think a lot of people still have confidence that Josh Allen will figure it out offensively and put the cape on. But can the Buffalo Bills defense come through, and can they come through against Trevor Lawrence?
And you're right, because that's their yawning flaw, is an inability to stop the run. But they have gotten better.
Yeah.
What concerns me, Raj, and I'm sure it does you because you've been watching it all season, they just do not have quality wideouts. And at this time of year, you absolutely need that. And they've got like six pedestrian guys, and they need more. I guess maybe what the need is that James Cook has to have a huge game come Sunday afternoon.
So you want to make a prediction? Are the Bills winning and advancing?
I people get mad when I don't pick the Bills to win, and this year I feel like, you know, they worked their way into this spot, and they're going to be playing in really nice weather, and so I'm going to pick them to win the game, because that'll be a nice way to go into the playoffs if they're playing in the second round.
There you go. Give me the Bills. I'm going to take the Bills too, but I'm a little leery because I think Trevor Lawrence and the Jags are playing at a high level right now, especially Trevor Lawrence. But I'm going to say this year, Kansas City out, like you said, and the Bengals are out, and the Ravens are out. Come on now. No more excuses now. This is set up for the Buffalo Bills.
That's exactly right.
Fair enough, Chuck.
Always a pleasure. No excuses.
No.
Those are three big dogs that are gone.
Gone.
And so to me, that changes the whole perspective from Buffalo's standpoint.
Look forward to it on Sunday, Chuck. Thanks for a few minutes on ESPN Radio.
You got it, my friend.
Take care, Chuck.
Thanks, Chuck.
That's Chuck Pollock from the Wellsville Sun. Yeah, I'll roll with Buffalo. All right, hour number two. Obviously, busy day with NFL football, but we always like to carve a little bit of time out for the New York Knicks, a very popular team here in the 5-1-8 with extremely high expectations this season. Sure. Jonathan Macri from the Knicks Film School is one of our go-tos when it comes to the Knicks. He joins us here on 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio. Jonathan, it's Roger and MJ. How are you? Happy New Year.
Yeah, I certainly high expectations, which I think is probably going to color our conversation right now, because you know, if this were just another ho-hum season, I don't think anybody would be too worried. But given the fact that everybody kind of penciled this team in to be in the finals, what they've been doing lately has raised a few eyebrows.
Yeah, well, you know, when my partner was on vacation for 2 weeks and soaking up the sunshine in Naples, Florida, I kept getting texts, Jonathan, about go Knicks, the Knicks are the best.
I did.
Knicks Nation.
They were playing well.
All this stuff. He was as high as a kite, my friend. Now, all of a sudden, he's not saying a word about the New York Knicks. What the heck is going on here?
Not good.
Well, I wouldn't blame him too much, and here's why. Yes, they've lost three games in a row, and that's, you know, probably all been since he's back. But the problems that we're seeing now have been around, I mean, at least the last month or so. You know, they have a bottom five defense, I think, going back about 3.5 weeks. But really, you could look at the defensive issues that they have had and say that they go back to not only the beginning of the season, but they kind of have these all of last year as well. Ever since this team paired Jalen Brunson and Karl-Anthony Towns together, the question was always going to be, could they defend at an acceptable rate? And they've had pockets here, you know, since those two guys have been together where it's been okay, but there's been other pockets like the one we're seeing now where it is just not passable.
Yeah, I mean, they're reverting back to where they were, and I just can't get the game out of my mind. It's been a while, but I still can't get it out of my mind. But they're starting to go down that road again. The way they played against Orlando a couple of months ago in a loss, I've never seen a worse defensive performance in quite some time.
Yeah, no, and I think their specific defensive issues manifest in a few different ways. So when you talk about that Orlando team, what is Orlando? They're a big team, a lot of guys who have both size and ability with the ball. That's really tough for a team that is kind of guard heavy like the Knicks. The distressing part is that what you saw against the Philadelphia 76ers over the weekend was a completely different type of team. The Sixers are a team built like the Knicks on their guard play, and the Knicks were no better suited to guard Tyrese Maxey and VJ Edgecombe than they were the likes of Franz Wagner and Desmond Bane. The fact is this team has a few, you know, defensive stoppers in theory, and OG Anunoby and Mikal Bridges, who are not playing up to their normal level. And so when you combine that with your weaker defenders, and there's a lot of attention being paid to Jalen Brunson right now, unfortunately. I love the guy, but he hasn't, you know, come to play on that end of the floor. It's just a bad combination, and they don't have much of a margin for error.
All right, Jonathan, as the resident Knicks guy, as you well know here, to spin it on a positive, I think back to, yes, when I was on vacation and when they were winning games post-Christmas on that three-game win streak, a guy who really has had a coming-out party since the NBA Cup championship is Tyler Kolek, and I was harping on him, and we had conversations. I was asking you questions last year, you know, is Tibbs going to play him? And now we know Mike Brown has. He's had his ups and downs, but really it's been more good than bad lately, Jonathan. Curious if you agree, and what have you made of Kolek's production here over the last couple weeks?
Yeah, I mean, Kolek, in other than maybe the NBA Cup, the Christmas game was probably the biggest game that they've played this year, and he won them that game. And he's doing it in a lot of different ways. You know, I think the thing with Kolek, the passing was always there. It always came down to three questions for me. Can he defend? Can he make shots? And then perhaps most importantly, can he be aggressive? Can he play with confidence? And we've seen all three of those things take shape this year. And the part that, of his game that I really want to praise is his defense, because you look at him, you know, see his height, you know, and he does not profile as a high-end defender. And while, look, he's still a small guard, he is feisty and he gets into it when he's out there. I think for me, the thing, and I think this is the same thing for Mike Brown moving forward, can he continue to play with the level of confidence you need to be a backup point guard on a contending team? I think he will stick in the rotation for now. I will be curious still to see if they feel the need to address that backup point guard position ahead of the trade deadline.
All right. Do you still, when you look at any other surprises in the East right now, Jonathan, I mean, we still think the Knicks maybe are the best team in the East, or should be and can be, and all of that still in front of them. But what else have you seen from what was supposed to be a watered-down East?
Well, I think, you know, the team the Knicks just played, Philadelphia 76ers, I think they may be surprising to some, but I think their question was always going to be health. And also, VJ Edgecombe was a rookie. People didn't know what they were going to get from him. He looks awesome right away. And Embiid and Paul George, you know, have been in the lineup. So I wouldn't call them a surprise. I think you have to look at the Boston Celtics, you know, and with all the respect to the Detroit Pistons, the Pistons are coming in this season and doing, they're playing as they have played for the last, you know, year and change. Tough, hard-nosed team. They're going to win with defense, just enough offense. Kate Cunningham is an All-NBA level player. For the Boston Celtics to be on the verge of having the best offense in the NBA without Jason Tatum playing a single minute this season, I'm sorry, that's got to be the most shocking development in the league. They're incredibly well coached. Jaylen Brown is making a run, you know, at a maybe not an MVP, but in the MVP discussion. So I would say they're not only the surprise of the East, I think they're the surprise of the league right now.
Speaking of those Pistons, tonight, 7 o'clock, Knicks will head to Detroit to take on the Pistons. Look, rematch of the first round last year, we know how scrappy and good Detroit was and took the Knicks to six games. How do you think this one plays out tonight? Knicks are second. They're still chasing Detroit for the top spot in the East.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing the Pistons do, and they're very comfortable with it, which is funny, you used to be able to say this about the Knicks, and you still can to a certain extent, playing in tough, close, physical games where it is a nip and tuck fourth quarter. So many of the Pistons games this year have come down to the wire, which is actually why their record is a little bit better than what their point differential would have you believe. They're missing some key guys. No Jalen Duren, who is making an all-star case this year. No Tobias Harris, no Caris LeVert. They have sustained injuries all year. I do not expect much, if any, of a drop-off from them tonight, despite the fact that they're missing those guys. And before I move on and we get out of here, the one name we haven't brought up yet is Josh Hart. I do not think it is a coincidence that this tail-off for the Knicks has coincided with Josh Hart missing games, really his most extended absence since he has been a member of the Knicks. He is the glue that holds them together. He is their energizer. He is, frankly, their heart and soul, no pun intended. So they're going to be without him again tonight. I think they're going to be in for a tough one. I would expect a close game either way, though.
Yeah, so kind of another, you know, barometer game, right? I mean, Detroit's good, and Knicks go on the road. Let's see what they got tonight.
Hey, listen, one way or another, I think these two teams are going to meet up again in the playoffs. So if you want to come out and set a tone and say, hey, we respect what you're doing, but we're still the big boys in this conference, I think you got to go out and at least play better than you've played the last two-plus games here, because if they go out and play like they did against Philly and Atlanta, they're not going to stand a chance against this Detroit team.
Fair enough. Jonathan Macri, always appreciate you joining us here on ESPN Radio in Albany. We'll talk soon.
You guys, talk soon.
Thanks, Jonathan. And he is the Deaner of New York Knicks Film School. And we're back on Big Board Sports, turning our attention to some local college basketball, and we'll get to the Siena recap coming up at the bottom of the hour. They got a much needed win at Rider yesterday afternoon. Yep. UAlbany coming off the road loss at UMass Lowell.
Yeah.
Got blown out, no other way of putting it, in the second half.
Yeah.
And now they come with a quick turnaround, a few days off, and Bryant will come in, the defending champs in the America's Conference. And the coach is our good friend Jamie and Christian, and he joins us here on Big Board Sports on 104.5. The team coach, it's Roger and MJ. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. Good morning to you guys. Happy New Year. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, man.
Absolutely,
no, I think the last time I was in front of Coach Christian, correct me if I'm wrong, but it might have been when we went to dinner. It was me and Kelly, you and your wife, and we went to Delmonico's Italian Steakhouse. You remember that?
It was incredible. I mean, you said it was incredible, and it was incredible. So since that day, I've learned to trust your word like those that listen to you every day. You know, it was incredible.
Well, and we still partner up with Delmonico's Italian Steakhouse.
Yeah, that hasn't changed.
And this is your second trip to the 518. You're right. I missed you the first time around when you were at MVP Arena against Siena. How's your team been since then, Coach?
Well, much better since then. You know, the Saints obviously have a great team this year. They've done an incredible job. And, you know, we're rebuilding, as so to speak. But I love our talent, our roster. You know, I got to make sure we don't go 0-2 in the 508 this year.
Yeah, no question about that. And it'll be a test. UAlbany's got a lot of talent on that team. They're coming off a tough loss at UMass Lowell. How about your win over Maine? What was give me the details of that one.
Well, you know, number one, incredibly tough place to play.
Yeah.
You know, I've got 9 freshmen on my roster, so every day is a learning experience for them. I loved our grittiness and our toughness. We got 16 offensive rebounds, found a way to execute in a way at the end of the game, which we had not done up to this point of the year. You know, we've got a really talented roster. You know, we've got some guys. We've got 3 different guys who've been America East Rookie of the Week. So we've got some young, talented guys that are come. We're going to continue to grow as the year goes on. And I think we're a really scary team because of that.
Are you shooting a lot of threes?
Oh, you know it. I mean, we're taking half our shots from 3. The difference is, you know, we're really a strong offensive rebounding team. And, you know, we're really trying to attack the glass. We're the biggest team in the country. And we're the biggest team in the country in terms of height. You know, we block a ton of shots. So we've taken a little bit of the playbook we had at Siena and kind of and moved it forward a little bit.
Wow, we thought you Albany had a big team. Well, where do you see Bryant?
Yeah, we're going to see that Saturday.
Yeah.
do you
throw it inside a lot?
You know, we don't throw it inside as much as I'd like to. You know, when we built the blueprint for this team, you know, I wanted to be able to post up everybody. You know, I want to build complete basketball players with the ability to play in the pick and roll and play in the post up and make passes. We just haven't been able to get there yet. But I definitely feel like there's the way that we're going to get there, you know, because I've seen us kind of make those improvements in practice. And, you know, it's the way that I like to play with the way we shoot the ball from the outside and the way that we can attack the rim. The post-up is sort of the third phase that takes time for them to learn. You know, the longer these guys are kind of with us, I kind of see that as something that's going to evolve for us.
Hey, Coach, with it being conference play now as the new year hits 2026, you got UMass Lowell coming up Thursday at home, who Roger and I just saw on Saturday, and then UAlbany coming up on Saturday, so you'll be able to watch the tape on that game that we saw as well. What do you make of the America East as a whole, Coach, and what are you looking forward to with this week's coming matchups?
You know, where you look at, I mean, obviously Vermont had the best non-conference record.
Yeah.
You know, they've got a lot coming back, and, you know, guys that didn't play last year that are returned back to their roster. You know, but it's such an incredible league because you've got, you know, when you look at the coaches in this league, you got a lot of coaches who've made NCAA tournaments either at the institutions they're at now or at other institutions, right? Which means, you know, you got some coaches that know what it looks like to win. You know, there's not a lot of rookie head coaches or guys who are kind of figuring it out. So those kind of teams are going to continue to get better. You know, UMBC's been really strong. I mean, again, with Ferry there, been in the NCAA tournament a bunch of times, coaching the A-10. You know, so when I look at the America East, I say this is an interesting league because you've got some coaches who have an established style of play. And then we're kind of the team that everyone's going to try to figure out. You know, you got a coach who's coming back to the States for the first time with a group of guys that no one's familiar with. You know, and I think that's what makes the league really exciting. It's like, whose dominance of style of play gives you the best chance to win on every given night? That's America East basketball this year.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, when you play UMass Lowell, Jamie, that is a team that will throw the ball inside.
Yeah. Well, they throw it inside, and they play physical. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, watching that game last night, you know, the ability of UMass Lowell to get to the free throw line and to get that ball inside of 15 feet for their scores to kind of, you know, assert their dominance, if you will, onto the game. You know, they just do an incredible job of getting their scores in the right position, the right places. You know, that's always going to be the challenge with them. I mean, you know, year in and year out, you know, UMass Lowell, you say, I mean, you look at their roster, you say this or that. They've always got 2 guys that really score the ball, and they're put in those positions to do that. And everybody on their team knows their role and knows what they need to do. That's a sign of a great coach team.
Jamie, and who's your top scorers?
So we have Ty Tabalas is one of our leading scorers. He's been America East Rookie of the Week 3 times. He's an outstanding scorer. Tim Roduski, who is our 6'9", 2-guard, you know, comes to us from Russia. You know, those guys score the ball well for us. Both those guys make 3s, but they're learning how to play college basketball, and they're learning how to master playing college basketball. We think those guys, you know, they've put together incredible years. Ashley Sims starts at the 4 spot for us. You know, he's a guy just coming off his first career double-double, and he's a ball mover for us. And then Quincy Allen is a human highlight film. You know, he's been on SportsCenter top 10 plays a few times this year, finished above the rim. He's also coming off his first career double-double.
Yeah.
So, again, we've got a young group here that's really growing and learning, and that's what's exciting for me. You know, I love those kind of groups. You know, I love those groups that are kind of finding themselves as the year goes on, and I really believe in that, and I really pride myself in trying to be the person to help these guys.
What did you see out of UAlbany when you watched the game against UMass Lowell?
Great athleticism on the front line, like you mentioned. You know, a lot of guys that can block shots, can dunk the ball and get up quickly. You know, I think that's impressive, you know, at any level, to have that many guys on the front line that can affect the game. You know, again, I think we lead the America East in shot blocks. They might be right behind us. So that battle at the rim, the battle to get a layup is going to be really tough for both teams. Probably going to come down to a team that's able to defend the 3 the best. And, you know, we're trying to be one of the best teams at doing that.
Hey, you got Coach Harley Fuller on your roster, right?
Of course I do. You know, yeah, I got to keep a good guy with me from the Capital Region, you know, wherever I go.
Yeah, well, he's a good guy. We had him on. Where was he prior to you?
He was at Mohawk Junior College where they won a national championship.
Yeah, national title.
Yeah. Incredible coach. Incredible connector. You know, it was really pivotal with Jalen Pickett, you know, at Siena. You know, did an unbelievable job of just spending time with him and staying connected with him. And, you know, he's just an incredible coach. I mean, he's got incredible passion, incredible personality. You know, he oversees our offense. You know, it's driving him crazy right now because we've got these young guys making some different decisions. But I just know his ability to communicate and to put guys in the right position. Again, his track record is immaculate on what he's able to do with teams. And so I'm excited to have him overseeing our offense.
Now, you play UMass Lowell what day this week?
We'll play them on Thursday. And then we'll travel up on Friday and practice at Albany, and then we'll play Albany obviously on Saturday.
Very good. Well, I'll be doing a play-by-play of Tamarack at Spa Catholic High School boys basketball Friday night. But I will see you at Broadview Center, and I'll talk to you later on this afternoon.
Yeah, my friends, thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks, Jamie.
Have a great
Appreciate
week.
You.
Thanks, Coach.
Take care. All right, we are back. Siena men get a snap a three-game skid, go on the road, and handle their business down in Lawrenceville, New Jersey. The Beat Rider, a team that Ryder edged them by two last year. Yep. So they've had a close loss, but second half really did a good job. And I think that zone defense had plenty to do with it.
You bet.
The voice of the Saints is Emmanuel Barbari, and he joins us on 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio. Emmanuel, it's Roger and MJ. How are you?
Good. How are you guys? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man.
Course,
appreciate
man.
A few
We're
minutes.
Good.
And
yeah,
no doubt a much-needed win, right, for the Saints last night.
Oh, yeah, especially looking early in conference play. I was thinking to myself, yeah, am I overreacting to call this maybe a must-win game? But you're coming off the loss to Iona, a tight loss on Friday that you easily could have had. You don't want to get swept in a weekend, especially with a winnable game against a team that, you know, Ryder, I think, down the stretch could get things together. They have talent on that roster. They haven't won a D1 game yet this year. Their one win is over a D2 team, and now they've lost 10 consecutive games. They're winless in the MAC. So, yeah, it's never easy to win on the road in this league, but that was a game you had to have, just to split the weekend, make it a wash. Speaking of wash, Iona loses by 40 up at Marist. So it just goes to show you the ebbs and flows of the MAC the last couple of years and this year. So I think Siena winning that game, they're in really good shape at 3-1, and now they can reset. And the goal, I think, is to hopefully get a little bit more healthy as we move forward here.
That score, that Iona Marist score, blew me away. I mean, because I watched the Siena Iona game, and you know, certainly they could have won that game, had chances. But then that 44-point win, and that was at Marist, right, on the road.
Yeah, that was at Marist on the road, and I saw 20 at halftime because we were in the middle of our game, so we were peeking at the score, and I'm like, oh, wow, 20, that stands out at you. And then normally you expect, all right, like one team's going to, no, it's not like they're not going to play hard, but these games tend to get within 15, 10, maybe single digits, but it would be a comfortable Marist win. We look back up, and it's a 40-point game, and I think what is interesting about this Iona team taken away from that Marist loss is that we saw on Friday night, you know, they're a gifted offensive team and they can get hot. They don't try on the defensive end of the floor. So I think when things get a little bit dire for them, I'd be curious to see like how they face that adversity. But if they get hot, you know, they have so many shooters, and we saw Toby Harris on Friday hit 6 threes and a half. You know, they're a really dangerous team.
Well, it was 40-31, Siena at halftime, and then Siena goes on a 10-0 run. You go up 61-45 and roll to a 74-65 win. What was the difference, and did changing and going to a zone defense, was that a spark, Emmanuel?
That was definitely a spark, and it was the most zone I saw Siena play front to back in a game this year. And especially we look at the first 2 years of Jerry McNamara, he's used the zone, but not quite to that level throughout the duration of a game. It really worked, and I think that's good for this team right now, especially if you're looking at 7-8 scholarship players at any given time being healthy. I like the zone look to limit teams against certain opponents, teams that don't shoot it as well, like Ryder. They're bottom of the country in three-point shooting. And the other strength of the Siena team, whenever they play full court pressure, they seem to go on a run. Now, a lot of times they're down by 10 or 15 when that's happening. So it's out of desperation mode, or maybe the game is on the verge of getting away and then Sienna fights back in. I think Jerry McNamara would like to play that even more, but it's tough when you're relying on Gavin Doty and Justice Schultz to play 39, 40 minutes to run a full-court press the entire game. It's just not realistic. So I think they've identified two defenses that work really well for them. That was a spark in the game. And also the play of the bigs, because with Tasman Goodrick missing the last couple of games at this right knee ailment, you need to dip down and get some production out of the Antonio Chandlers and Riley Mulvey's of the world. And Mulvey was coming back from a concussion himself. He's working on that conditioning and trying to get into full game shape and get back in the swing of things. And Mulvey gave some quality minutes yesterday. After two early fouls again, like he did against Iona, he had three separate putbacks, and Chandler had a massive game. So I thought the front line was the key.
Emmanuel, next up is Friday, 7 p.m. back at the MVP Arena against Merrimack, who's 5-0, sitting atop the MAC unbeaten so far, with Sienna closely behind. What's in store for the Saints coming up on Friday back at home?
Yeah, I think that's a big time. You reset with this victory, and now you got to defend your home floor. And if you can be the team that hands Merrimack its first loss, that's going to do a lot for you confidence-wise down the stretch, but also Sienna wants a shot at the regular season title, which is well within grasp.
Sure.
That's a big game. Whether you fall to a two-loss team, Merrimack stays undefeated, that's a big swing game early in the conference schedule, on top of the fact that it's a home game at MVP Arena. It is pretty remarkable when you consider what Merrimack was doing under Joe Gallo before they entered the MAC, and now it's sort of been a continuation these last 2 years. So, yeah, big game on Friday. Then you turn around and play the Mount on the road on Sunday. Kind of a tough weekend in store.
What is and we're talking with the voice of the Saints, Emmanuel Barbari. Emmanuel, what's GMAC doing with his rotation here? I'm looking at minutes. I mean, Schultz played 38. Doty went 36. And no other player logged more than 29. Has he shortened the rotation a little bit?
He definitely has, not necessarily by choice. With Jerry McNamara, it's always going to be who's practicing best, and it's going to be earning minutes, and every player to a man will echo that. I found it interesting, just to sidebar here a little bit, Gavin Doty, who has the game of his career on Friday against Iona, and we've seen plenty of Gavin Doty vintage efforts. That was next level, 31-12 with five steals, and the way he was defending in the full court the entire second half. I've never seen a performance like that. And then early in the game, he makes a play that Jerry McNamara didn't like. He gets pulled. He got pulled out of the game early on against Ryder. So nobody has the liberties in earning minutes on this roster, a leg up on anybody else. Everybody's kind of evaluated on the same tier, which is why Jerry McNamara has so much respect from the entirety of the team. I think if they were fully healthy, he'd want to go 8-9, maybe max 10 deep. But it's just not the reality right now. Owen Schlager's been out, and still he was looking to find the rhythm at this level, his first year at the Division I level. You have no Marcus Jackson, no Tajay Jones, no Tasman Goodrick. Goodrick's the big one.
Oh, yeah.
Because he'd be a double-double machine in this league. We saw it early in the year. So I think it's a matter of who can grab hold of like that number eight spot, because there are seven guys locked in. Mulvey's minutes were huge because that's another guy in the front court in Goodrick's absence who can help you. But it's pretty much locked in, and Francis Folasack, with how great he's been as a freshman, is clearly your starting five right now.
What's up with Marcus Jackson?
Yeah, and that's on the top of everybody's minds because there's a captain. There's a guy who last year we saw earlier in the season, not necessarily the skill set of a Gavin Doty, but it's a similar type of player, right,
where he's
diving on the floor for loose balls. He's a heart and soul hustle guy. What he could do for this team is like an eighth or ninth guy, giving you 5 or 10, even 10 minutes a game. It would be massive just to spell other guys and make sure that Gavin Doty doesn't have to play 40 minutes a night. But it's sort of been touch and go with Marcus Jackson the entire season. He had that hip impingement to start. He had the injury. He's been in and out with injury. And then I think at a certain point, if you're not in a position where you're all in on your role and you're practicing better than anybody else, like Marcus Jackson probably came into the season expecting to be a starter. So then you get hurt. You're kind of deeper down the depth chart. There are guys ahead of you, clearly, with more talent on this team. Unless Marcus Jackson in practice is going to fully embrace, like, hey, I'm going to give the team 5-7 minutes every single night, Jerry McNamara may not play him because he wants what's best for his team out on the floor every single night. So that doesn't mean there's a lack of respect between the two. I just think you look at Marcus Jackson's role, unless he's going to go out and earn those minutes in practice, Jerry McNamara is going to ride with the other guys.
Yeah, and so he's not hurt right now, Marcus Jackson. He's just not playing.
Yeah, I didn't hear anything in terms of an injury over the weekend.
Yeah.
Now, something could have developed because he didn't play Friday, and there have been games this year where he didn't play where it wasn't injury-related. It was more, all right, we have better guys to go with on the floor. So there might have been, I might have missed something if there was an injury on Sunday that developed, but to my knowledge, there have just been too many games this year where there were other guys more worthy of those minutes, where I don't think even if he was healthy, it would be an injury thing.
Yeah, because I'm just looking at the box score, and I'm not seeing his name pop up anywhere. How about Goodrick? How long of how much longer will they be without him, do you know?
Another wait-and-see situation where I look back to that weekend in D.C. right after Thanksgiving where they swept the weekend at American University, and Tasman Goodrick was held out of that weekend, even though he technically could have gone, but it was such a pain tolerance thing where Jerry McNamara was thinking bigger picture. I'm not going to put our future season, his future individually, in jeopardy over a few out-of-conference games. And then he worked his way back into the lineup, but then it was still pain tolerance. Like Jerry McNamara, a couple games recently, I think back to the Indiana game, where he was planning to start him and limit him. Like it wouldn't have been more than 15 minutes that night. And in shoot-around and warm-ups, literally 30 minutes before the game into warmups, Jerry McNamara is evaluating Tasman Goodrick about whether he can play. So I think moving forward, the most ideal scenario is the Saints get Tasman Goodrick back to a point where he can contribute and help. Maybe he can start and then Falefa can still take most of the minutes at the five. Worst case scenario, you'd have to shut him down, but I think it's a wait and see. It's a feel thing. How much pain can you tolerate out of that right now?
Yeah, and he's a big one because when he's out there, he's really good. There's no question. They need him healthy come playoff time for sure. All right, so I'll ask you the New York Yankees question, and we'll let you go. What are you hearing about Cody Bellinger and the Yankees landing him here now that we're past the holiday season?
Yeah, I know everybody had grown a little bit impatient with the Yankees offseason and Cody Bellinger in particular. It's been a slow developing market on his front. And what I would say is the Yankees, it's pretty consistent. I see all this reporting about, the Yankees have upped their offer to 5 years. They've always been comfortable giving Cody Bellinger 5 years. It's been five for a while. I just think the Yankees aren't comfortable going six or seven to land Cody Bellinger and to reunite with him. So that offer is on the table. And it's going to be a question of how quickly this market develops. And since we're past the new year and we're about a month and change out from spring training, I would think that resolves sooner rather than later. But the Yankees offer is 5 years. If you want to ballpark it, what did Cody Bellinger make last year? $27 million. So they're probably offering in the 30 to 32 range. So I'd say their offer is five for 150, 160. Does it go up to a sixth year? That would depend on somebody coming in at the last minute, like another team, and forcing the Yankees' hand. Otherwise, I could see that ending up being the deal that Cody Bellinger takes.
Fair enough. Emmanuel, always a pleasure. Thank you for your time, and we'll see you soon.
Of course. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you, Emmanuel. Emmanuel Barbari with us talking Siena men's basketball. The NFL's regular season playoffs are here. Wild card matchups are set. Austin Mock is with us from The Athletic, who covers the National Football League and joins us here on 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio. Austin, it's Roger and MJ on ESPN Radio in Albany. Good afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it. Hope you enjoyed the drama this weekend.
Oh, yeah. Enjoy the drama. And any of the coaching firing surprises? Stefanski out in Cleveland, Pete Carroll out in with the Raiders, and Gannon is out with Arizona. Any surprises there? And, of course, the Atlanta Falcons head coach is out as well. Any surprises there for you?
No. I think that was kind of par for the course. You know, there were rumblings about Pete Carroll. I know, he only had 1 year, so that was kind of the surprising, I guess the most surprising from a 10-year one. The other ones, they're either guys who underperformed for multiple years or, in Stefanski's case, I know he's won Coach of the Year twice, but that team just never offensively over the last, 3 years or so just has kind of bottomed out. And I know that's quarterback issues, but I think that might be the most surprising to people just because of the coach of the year. But to me, kind of, you we're listening to the rumblings out there in the media. I think everything so far is pretty on par.
Well, the big news here is the Giants are sticking with Joe Shane as the general manager. That is the headline in New York today, and now he'll have to figure out who the next head coach is going to be. Are a Stefanski or a Mike McCarthy, would they be good fits for the New York Giants?
Yeah, you know, it's Stefanski, as much as he struggled, like, he showed that he was able to win, right? He had success with the Browns, even though it kind of bottomed out. So I wouldn't mind that. You know, he's a young offensive mind. He can get back into that offensive roots that he started with early in his Cleveland tenure, you know, with Jack Bedard and, you know, Malik Nabers coming back from injury, Cam Scadigbo. So that would be an interesting one. He's more of like a high floor kind of hire for me. I don't know what his ceiling is anymore. Like, I think he can quickly turn around. You know, if you want to say the culture, the whatever you want to call it, the non-winning ways, I think he can get there. It's just the question of how high can he take them. So those two, I know those ones have been flirted around. You know, it's just, what do you want? Do you want a, you know, and it's going to be interesting because Shane's, I don't know if his seat is, you know, warm or anything like that, but you assume it kind of is. He might want a high floor guy like Mike McCarthy who can turn things around quickly. So that'll be an interesting one to watch as the playoffs go on here.
Are you one that believes the Giants do need to hire an experienced head coach, one who has some NFL head coaching experience over the road that they've been going down here over the many years that hasn't worked?
You know, I don't think so. I just think it's more about, you know, finding the guy who's the right coach. You know, we've seen, you know, look at Liam Cohen. The Jaguars were a mess, and, you know, he had no head coaching experience, and you know, now he's leading the maybe one of the hottest teams going into the playoffs here. So I don't think that's a prerequisite or anything like that. I think the key is just, again, finding someone that you think is a good coach. Don't just be like, oh, well, don't pigeonhole yourself into, you know, disqualifying candidates because of one little attribute. Is it something nice to have? Sure. But, you know, a lot of times those coaches are no longer coaching at their old stomping grounds for a reason, and I think that's something that you have to weigh as well.
Austin, another year the Jets don't make the playoffs, still the longest drought in professional sports. They finished the year, what, without an interception, which is absolutely mind-boggling and insane to me with their defense overall. Aaron Glenn returning, but they're going to have the number two pick, and you know they need a quarterback. What route do you think, or avenue, I should say, the Jets should go, in your opinion, Austin? Should they go draft the QB, a Mendoza or someone like that, or should they use their picks to trade for a potentially available big-name free agent in the offseason?
Yeah, I think it's probably smarter to go the quarterback route. Just to, you know, there's two. Dante Moore hasn't announced yet, and Fernando Mendoza is the top two there, but they're still playing in the college football playoffs. But I think that's the route I would go. It's so much easier, and I don't know if it's kind of like the, you know, burden off of your chest or whatever when you have your quarterback in place, because then you can kind of, that's the big piece, right? And you can kind of build out the rest of your roster. And you know, to be honest, the Jets, you know, you don't get to the number two pick usually without needing a kind of a total reset of your roster. So I don't know if trading away assets, I don't think that's the right move at all. You know, if you're inclined to possibly trade back, you know, sure. I'm always kind of open to that just to get more draft picks for the future. But yeah, I would be looking at the quarterback with the number two, kind of opposite of whatever the Raiders do, unless, you know, someone comes along with a huge, you know, huge price to move up into that number two spot, then I'd be fine trading down as well.
Set for wild card weekend. What's your take on our regional team of interest here, the Buffalo Bills, going to Jacksonville?
Yeah, I mean, the key is Allen's health, right? You know, I don't think the last time we saw him, I don't think he was probably near 100%. And he is just, like, I don't think there's a player in the league that is more, you know, vital to what they do from an offensive standpoint, and just overall, like, team strength. Like, you know, the defense has struggled, definitely the rush defense in the later part of the year here. But, you know, when you're able to run the ball and control the clock, like the Bills offense has, that's a big key. And Josh Allen's a huge part of that. If he's not healthy, whether that affects his accuracy or power in the throwing, in the passing game, or whether it's just, you know, maybe the linebackers don't have to key on him as much when he's handing off to James Cook. That's the key here. And, you know, if he's healthy, anything is possible. I truly believe that, because those type of quarterbacks tend to elevate the rest of the team to beat pretty much anyone. And the AFC is wide open. So I don't think any team in the AFC is like a juggernaut or anything like that. So you give me a healthy Josh Allen, and I think the Bills are definitely live to make a run to the Super Bowl.
Austin, what'd you make of the Sunday night game? What a finish. I mean, just the missed field goal there by the rookie that hasn't missed inside 50 all year for the Ravens, and then going back to the mixed extra point by the Steelers. I mean, what a game. And I, at the end of the day, Aaron Rodgers was pretty darn good last night.
Yeah, that fourth quarter was just about everything you could ask for if you're the NFL, with how entertaining that was. But yes, they're both kickers, both reliable. Like, Boswell's been great for Pittsburgh for years now, and then he misses that extra point to leave it open, and then Baltimore can't get it done. But yeah, Rodgers did look good. I don't know if that's more of a testament to the Ravens' defense. The key to Rodgers is getting pressure on him without having to blitz. He's a smart, intelligent guy, right? We've known this for his whole career. If you show him where the blitz is, or he finds out where the blitz is coming from, he will kill you. Like, that's still true today, and you know, being 42 years old or whatever he is. I don't know if the Ravens have the pass rush to do that, but that's the kind of the show there is, hey, he can beat you if you're not going to get pressure on him. Whether he can do that against the Texans on Monday night next week, we'll see. But yeah, that, I don't want to say it was vintage Rodgers, but that was a pretty good end of the season for him, and giving a little bit of hope going into the playoffs.
Boston, it's on a Super Wild Card weekend, 6 games, 3 NFC, 3 AFC. What matchup intrigues you the most, and why?
That's a good question. They're all kind of interesting, because I don't think there's a ton of like dominant teams. Like, the Rams are probably the most dominant team for me. They have to go on the road to a team they already lost to in that stadium. Yeah. That'll be an interesting one. But yeah, I think the most likely is probably Chicago Green Bay. Third time they've played. It's all been in the second half of the year here. Chicago, like, you know, kind of believes in, got some faith in Caleb Williams, you know, down the stretch, and then they lay the egg against the Lions yesterday. That offense is still inconsistent. I know, hopefully they get Roma Dunze back to boost up those pass catchers. But Packers injured as well. Like, that's kind of the interesting thing, where I think the ceiling of those teams can make some noise in the NFC, but they're so banged up right now. And it kind of, you know, is kind of a key path to how the NFC will go. Whether the Rams, you know, if the Rams have to go to the Eagles in the second round, depending on, you know, how things shake out and those things, that'll be an interesting matchup. So, you know, does Seattle have to play Green Bay in the second round? So that's probably the most interesting, because I think it kind of flips the NFC playoff picture on its head a little bit, depending on who wins.
And nothing would surprise me. Absolutely nothing of any of the games would surprise me, no matter which team wins. And we talked about the Steelers. I mean, they got Houston on Monday night. That's going to be a tall order for the Steelers, just because how good defensively Houston is.
Yeah, and Houston, they've been a little bit leaky the last month or so. So that'll be an interesting thing. The other thing that I like matchup-wise for Pittsburgh, I'm not saying that they're definitely going to win, but the quick game with Aaron Rodgers. They get DK Metcalf back too, but Rodgers wants to get the ball out quick, so maybe that mitigates the pass rush, Will Anderson Jr. So that'll be a matchup to look. And, you know, the Steelers add, like, you know, you can't underrate a home playoff game. It's going to be a night game, cold. And the Texans offense has kind of been like hit or miss at times. You know, they've struggled. They struggled with the Raiders a few weeks ago. They struggled with the Colts yesterday. So I'm not going to sit here and say that the Steelers, you know, I think they're kind of, I don't want to say the laughing stock of it, but, you know, I think people would say they're one of the worst teams to get in, if not the worst. But, you know, playing at home in the NFL, a home playoff game, that's a pretty sizable advantage for you. So I do think that there is a path to win that game, definitely with Houston's offense and their defense kind of not being, at the top of their game heading into the playoffs.
We all look forward to Wild Card Weekend. Austin Mock from The Athletic, keep up the great work. We always appreciate you joining us here on ESPN Radio in Albany.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, guys. Appreciate it. Enjoy the playoffs.
Yep, you too, buddy. Austin. That's Austin Mock. Does great work with The Athletic.